Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590 The Fan, Blake Murphy, Ailish Forfar, J.D. Bunkus. Joined now by former Raptors point guard, current Sportsnet color analyst, Alvin Williams. And this insider is brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. Alvin, how are you this morning, man?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
Doing all right. Be doing better if the first two games of this Raptors 76ers series had gone a little more smoothly. Obviously, there are a lot of reasons for that, but high level, what's your feeling with this series? Are the Raptors still in it, or is this has the outcome been revealed here with the dominance of these first two games?
No, the Raptors are still in it. You know, when you're a competitor and when you still have to go home and you get two games at home, you know, you always hear the narrative that, you know, you haven't won a series until, you know, you lost on your home floor. So that's the biggest thing. I think the Raptors did a much better job in the second game, being more physical, coming out, you know, just trying to be that team that they've been all season. But you got to take your hat off to the Sixers, man. They're playing their butts off. They're efficient from the field. They're making their shots. Guys are stepping up outside of the two superstars. So it's one of those things the Raptors really have to figure out leading to game three.
So I agree with you that the Raptors looked a lot better in sticking to some of their, you know, identity pieces in game two. But like you said, it was still a tough go, and Philadelphia still scored pretty effectively, especially in transition. And like you said, got contributions kind of up and down that starting group. If you're the Raptors and you're turning this around for game three, you played a shaky game one and a better game two, but the outcome was fairly similar. Are you changing your approach to what you're doing with an Embiid, with a Harden at this point? Or are you running it back another time and saying, look, we weren't that far off. You know, we can keep pushing this thing in the right direction, being ourselves.
I think you definitely continue to give or explore the options of giving Embiid different looks. You have to. He's too talented. What the Sixers have done is they're getting him the ball closer to the basket. You're not seeing Embiid early on float around the perimeter. So he's inserting his dominance early on. So I think the Raptors definitely have to continue to explore and give different looks. The biggest thing, you're not going to stop a Joel Embiid. You can be physical with him. All you can do is hope that you can, you know, just compete and make sure you make him uncomfortable. But the Maxis and the Tobias Harris's and, you know, Danny Green coming and hitting big time threes, things like that, those are the things that are going to hurt you. So when you have a Tyrese Maxey that's doing what he's doing, and then you have a Tobias Harris doing the things that he's doing, that's what's making it really tough, because they're not only doing things that's alleviating some of the pressure off of James Harden and Tobias Harris, I mean, and Joel Embiid. They're doing well on defense, and they're changing the outlook of the game. You know, the Sixers took a 10-point lead with Joel Embiid on the bench, so that their role guys are really stepping up. And as the Sixers, the Sixers, when you're playing that well and your supporting staff is playing that well, they're going to be a tough team to beat.
Alvin, you mentioned the strong position Embiid's been able to get and how Philly's gotten them the ball deeper inside the paint. Some of that is he's been a monster in transition. He's beating Raptors down the floor and getting those early seals. When I look at that, and I'm wondering if you feel the same, that to me maybe suggests you're not finding enough ways to make him work on defense. What have you thought about how the Raptors are attacking or avoiding Embiid at the other end?
I think, you know, it's just difficult when you have a style that the Raptors play, and that's more of like a freelance, and you have different people touching a basketball. It's one of those things where you have to be deliberate in getting those matchups that you want. Joel Embiid has times where he's guarding Pascal Siakam. He's guarding other people, and I think you just always have to attack. But once again, it's difficult because he has size, he has length. At the same time, you have to explore other matchups. Sometimes get the ball away from whoever Joel Embiid is guarding and attack that matchup, opposed to trying to continue to go at Joel Embiid. And the other thing, you can't turn the ball over. You know, you talk about Joel Embiid in transition, getting that part of his offense. You can't turn the ball over. You got to do the things that you got to offensive rebound, and just make sure on offense you push the tempo as well
to make sure Joel Embiid is running, and he's never relaxing. So it's difficult to explore those matchups when Joel Embiid's on defense. But I think it's other people, James Harden that you attack. You know, guys like that, a Maxey you post up, a Nang, that's when he guards Pascal. You see Pascal starting to exploit that matchup. So I think it's other matchups you have to exploit and not just the Joel Embiid matchup.
Siakam certainly seemed to agree with you every time Niang was on him in that one. It was almost a bad thing that Niang got in foul trouble. When you look at the games that Siakam and Van Vliet turned in last night, and, you know, I thought they've been all right. I thought, especially in game one, Pascal was fairly effective. But are you getting enough from your top two guys right now, Alvin?
Oh, man. Do we look at the games now? Of course, you would want more, but you know, Fred came out last game and he was explosive from the 3-point line. He was penetrating, finding other players, and I think Pascal Siakam. You would like him to be more aggressive, but you're not going to be able to get those looks in the playoffs, right? You gotta be that assertive person, but. The defense, you're going to have to read the defense. You're going to see where the doubles are coming from. You're going to see where the help's coming from. But the others have to step up. And we talked about James Harden and Joel Embiid. But for the Sixers, the others have stepped up. And no one stepped up for the Raptors yet. That other person hasn't stepped up. OG had a big game, and he's doing well. But you need those other players to step up. You need Gary Trent Jr. to step up. You need these guys to continue to put their imprint on a game. So I think you want to get more from your top two guys, but the other guys really have to step up as well.
Yeah, I thought OG was their best player last night. I don't know how anyone could really even argue that. But Siakam's stat line is the same as Tobias Harris. I'm not sure that's going to get it done. And Fred VanVleet, sure, he came out hot, Alvin, but he had 14 of his 20 points in the first quarter, like 6 points for your all-star through three in a playoff game. It's hard for me to understand how, like, that's enough, especially considering the way that he faded. Is that a conditioning issue to you? Is that something where Fred doesn't have his health underneath it? Like, is that his legs wearing out? Like, what did you see from Fred's game as it went on? Because Siakam was at least consistent throughout. Fred just seemed to basically disappear offensively after the first.
You know, I mean, you look at the beginning of the game, Fred, he was on fire from three, you know, making deep threes and contested threes, and I don't know how much you can rely on that for four quarters, but I believe when you break down the defense and you find other players and you do things like that, that's the biggest thing that he could continue to do. Because as you mentioned, JD, I think OG was the guy that you could, you know, run the offense through a bit, through whether it's post up, whether giving him some isolation opportunities, as well as Pascal. I don't see relying on Fred to make those shots throughout the game is going to be a winning recipe. So I don't think it's conditioning. I think the Sixers doing a great job of showing him bodies and making sure he's going to feel force. And this, once again, this is the playoffs. And you, of course, you want more out of your all-star. You want more consistency. But I feel like he set the tone. I feel like he did a great job of setting the tone and keeping the team in the game in the first quarter. And that's when others, once again, have to step up. Because once again, you got to realize the Sixers are coming in that game trying to stop Fred VanVleet, trying to stop Pascal, trying to contain the others. So Fred has to do his job of figuring it out. But I more so believe it's an opportunity for the other players to get involved.
So what's the winning formula to you then? Because you said that you don't think that this team is out of it, but they really haven't been able to contain Embiid. And like the others around Siakam and Fred and OG are not going to improve discernibly. Like maybe you get a healthier Gary Trent, but I don't think that Barnes is going to be ready to contribute in this series. If he is, it's a miracle. And then you have a thumb injury, Thad, that also doesn't look like it's going to – they got to use the tennis ball or whatever it was that McKinney used on DeRozan. But this one doesn't seem to be preparing to be a short-term one. Like what is the thing that needs to change the most, in your opinion, for the Raptors to have that success?
The Sixers, I think, is more so the Sixers, their efficiency from the field. They're shooting the ball very well. They're shooting the ball well from three. And offensively, they're just playing very well. And maybe that's a home recipe, right? I mean, that's what they're doing at home. I remember, you know, playing, it was a five-game series, but
I remember playing Detroit, and we dropped the first two in Detroit, and it didn't look well. It didn't look good at all. And we came back home. The energy was different. We executed better. Our shots started going in across the board, and we took two games at home. So when I talk about being down 0-2 and then going home, I've experienced that. I've experienced the feel, and I can't quite say what adjustments we made. It just was a whole different feel. It was a different team. And now we're playing. We're back even. So I believe once the Raptors get home and some of these shots start falling across the board, I think that's something else. But you got to stick to the script. You got to make sure you're the team that's bringing that energy. You're being physical. And once again, you have to sustain that for four quarters, as you mentioned, not fade out. You have to play with that intensity for four quarters. You hope you get the generous whistle and on your side. So it's a lot of things. But right now, the Sixers are playing very well. But it can turn around in one game. The best thing about the playoffs is every game is different. So you make sure you go with that mindset.
So every game is different, but it sometimes feels like Nick Nurse plays a similar type of style versus the refs. And you've played, and you know the dynamic between refs and coaches. So what do you make of the Nick Nurse versus the refs versus the Embiid post-game remarks? And does that lose its effectiveness over time if you're a head coach and you're – kind of playing your cards that way?
Hey, first of all, you guys are making me down today. You sound so pessimistic today. Jeez and crackers. Let's pick it up a bit. I mean, it's only 0-2. We got two games at home, but you're right. I think, you know, Nick Nurse, he has to make sure that he stays on the ref. And that's that jockeying. That's that chess move. That's those things. Of course, you're upset and things you see when you watch tape and you're in the feel of the game, but it's more so to bring attention. Sometimes it's psychological. And it's just one of those things where we're going to continue to fight from all angles. And we have to, because we're undermanned. Right now we're playing against a hot Sixers team, and we have to figure out how we can get an advantage. So I think, you know, Nick Nurse knows that this is the physical part of the game. This is the part of the season where nobody's going to get anything easy. But you got to jockey for position. You got to jockey for some attention, and just bring that narrative to the forefront. And I think that's what Nick pretty much is doing.
All right, Alvin, let's send you out on a positive one. If you were to take one thing from the first two games that gives you optimism that, hey, the Raptors are going to win game three and this is going to be a series, it's going to feel different, what's that one item?
I feel like coming back home. I think that's the biggest thing when you're down, when you're playing 4-5 and you're playing against a team that, you know, everyone thought that the Raptors could win this series. And being down 0-2 and the margin, the loss margin is so big, it looks discouraging. But once again, every game is different. And I think I take that part because the playoffs, once again, every game is different. The themes may be the same, but the games and the approach can be different. So I think coming home is the biggest positive I can take from it. And let's get off the snide of losing and see what can happen at home in game three.
Alvin, I hope that you're right. I hope it turns around. I know, unfortunately, that means you got to head back to Philly once more, which you'd like to avoid. But, you know, we could have a series here still. Thanks so much for taking the time this morning, man.
Thanks, guys. Put a smile on your face. It's going to be all right.
Yeah, lots to smile about. That's Alvin Williams, former Raptors guard, Sportsnet color analyst. And
I like
insider,
how he said that, like, through his teeth. Like, he's like, put a smile on your face.
Or else.
It'll be all right. Like, it's like, couldn't have sounded less sincere.
That insider has been brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. I think he is right, though, that there's still room to, you know, not throw away the series.
Yeah, this
is it's not like we haven't seen teams come back from 2-0 and things look pretty dire in the past.
Blake,
it's just the Raptors have a lot of things they need to do better.
Blake, stop it. Go. Teams have come back 0-2. Please go find me your history of the game. Please go find me the aggregate score of the first two games being this way that has turned out to be the other team on the road end up winning this series. The Raptors don't have the best player in the series. They don't have the second best player in the series. And they're the team that's not as healthy. and now they're down 0-2. Like, we can pretend, like, what do you want to be? Do you want, guys want to be cheerleaders, or do you want to be honest? Because I think that we can say that there are things that we can still learn, that the Raptors can still be competitive, and this team has shown a resiliency and a toughness over the years that you can't count them out, sure, but this is dire straits. This isn't sunshines and rainbows days. Like, they're in a really, really, really tough spot. Like, and if Gary Trent Jr. can't get healthy and Scottie Barnes can't get healthy, this is a team that those minutes being that high for Siakam and Fred VanVleet that we discussed earlier in the show, that's there for a reason, because they don't really have the depth to be able to supplement all of this. When you're doing 19, Alvin just told us, like, we asked him, what's the reason to be optimistic? And he said, coming the home. Energy can change. Like, that's not the reason for hope. Like he said, the others need to be better. Well, the others are Malachi Flynn. Like that's who the others are right now. So I'm just, it's hard for me to look at this right now and spin it as, hey, everybody, it's going to be all right. This is not an all right situation. It's not blow up the organization, because again, you have to remember what the parameters were coming into this series, which were, hey, the Raptors were still underdogs, but they had no pressure, and that Philly had all the pressure. Philly has dealt with that pressure immensely well, and Toronto should not feel pressure in some way to prove that they can beat the Sixers, or it's some referendum on who they are as an identity, okay? There are going to be some questions coming off of this series, no doubt about it, but I'm not going to be portrayed as negative on this show, because we're discussing the Raptors being down 0-2 in a series where they're getting thumped by 35 points on aggregate, and they don't have the better players or the healthy team, and put it as some kind of like, oh, whoops, our bad for mentioning it like this way.
Yeah, I was just trying to not, you know, bury Alvin and kind of spin the conversation.
No, but I get why Alvin's doing it, because he looks at it through a player's lens, which is like, you're not giving up on the series. I appreciate his perspective. I just mean for us, my standpoint is I'm not looking at it as I'm being negative. I'm being truthful.
Yeah, so a couple examples, actually, of teams dropping the first two games by this margin. Do you actually want them or no? Asked me to find them.
No, I want them. Yes.
Give us some positivity that it's possible.
Okay, well, the Bucks did it last year against the Nets. The Raptors did it, of course, against the Bucks, and they actually lost those first two games by a combined 30 points.
Oh, okay.
The 2018 Cavs against the Celtics lost the games in Boston by just as much. The 2017 Celtics against the Bulls. There's been almost one a year.
Okay.
Of a team that gets down 2-0 and
then I changed my mind on everything.
Let's
all right.
Now, having said that, these last couple years, and maybe this is a league parity thing. Maybe this is there are more 3-point shots, so games can have more variance in recent years. Historically, teams only come back from a 2-0 deficit in 7% of NBA series.
Oh,
it just happens to have happened a bunch in the last 5 years or so.
That's pretty positive. I find something in that, Blake. Thank you.
Yes. I will say too, though, that it's like, my other question would be, how many of the games would be one where it was a blowout and the other one where it was tighter versus both games being blowouts, which were the two games with, like, that's the other part of this too, people, is that it's not just like the Raptors got edged out in a game. It's like they have basically been, how many quarters do you think the Raptors have been competitive in the series?
The first quarter and the fourth quarter yesterday.
Okay.
Not at all.
And the fourth quarter, you could chalk up to score effects.
I was going to say that, like, it was a score effects quarter to me in the last. Like, the Sixers were basically, okay, what time is the bus? Where are we going? And all of a sudden, the Raptors went on a 15-0 run, and they went, okay, we have to play again for another couple minutes. And then they didn't.
Then the answer is the first quarter yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So,
because the entire second half of game one was score effects, and those were played evenly. Yeah. And then if you're chalking up the fourth quarter yesterday to score effects, then, yeah, basically the actual competitive quarters, Philadelphia's won 4-1.
Yeah. So that's not great. It's just like, to me, it's like, what do I want to see coming home? I want to see a loud crowd that does shake up the Sixers. I want to see if a guy like Tobias Harris can hit those open shots in a foreign gym, because if those start to miss and those don't start to drop, then that is going to tighten things up. I do want to see if the Raptors can continue to contain James Harden that way. That's, to me, the biggest positive of the game outside of OG is the fact that, Blake, we talked about it after game one. Harden was too free. Harden basically got to do whatever he wants. I like that game plan. that they had for Harden. I think that they continue that game plan for James Harden. Some of it, I will say, a little bit is the numbers look a little different from him if those assists he's making to Embiid don't all end up at the free throw line, right? Like, if a lot of those end up being buckets, we're looking at Harden at, you know, the 12-plus assist range and saying, oh, okay, this was maybe a little bit better. But can you see Tyrese Maxey have a game like he's having right now when it's not chance of his name in the stadium, but it's different rims? Like, will those guys, like, to Alvin's point about the others, right? Philly's getting it all from the others. That is typically something you do see at home in playoff games and not as much on in the road on playoff games. So maybe when the Raptors do go back home, there's a little bit more comfort from a guy like Precious Achiuwa to knock down a shot. There's a little bit more comfort for a guy like Malachi Flynn, who comes in for a few minutes to knock down some shots, who didn't have any points in this last game. Like, I do believe that the Raptors role players can have an uptick, but to me, it's going to come down to the main thing. Can you find a way where your two all-stars are giving you more than what James Harden and Maxey are giving you? I think we have to accept that Embiid is going to get his stats. Embiid is going to have his, if he plays a full game, 35 and 15 numbers, right? But can Siakam and Van Vliet elevate over top of that? Can you win on aggregate with those two guys, or let's put three? Can you win on aggregate with OG, Fred, Siakam over Maxey, Harden, and Embiid? That has to be the equation to me.
Smart takes on the biggest stories in sports. The Fan Drive Time with Ben Ennis and Stephen Brunt. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fan Morning Show. It's the Wake and Rake. It's JD, it's Blake, it's Ailish. We're having a day, okay? Yesterday it just snowed. All of a sudden it just decided to be a blizzard in Toronto. And I was such a degenerate yesterday that I wasn't even going outside. Like, it was one of those days I'm indoors. And I do the open window. Oh my goodness, it's snowing outside. And then I go to Instagram and see everyone's story is the snow. So the snow happens. The Raptors get smoked again. People are at each other's throats about what's going on with the Raptors. People are afraid that they're going to lose this team early that we had a lot of confidence in. We were dreaming about maybe a little bit of a mini run. Maybe a little bit of getting into the Sixers' heads. Maybe getting to see the wonderful rookie Scottie Barnes continue just an electric season. He gets hurt. We're up early. Ailish's equipment fails. She has to run into work. Discombobulates the show. Someone just took over our board, apparently, which is a thing. Someone can hijack our board, which is the thing that runs the entire ship. Somebody stole it from Vic. I don't know if he's trying just not to get fired or whether it's actually the truth. I'll trust Vic. You know, I will say this.
I've been fired before, my friend.
I was going to say, he's been fired many times on this show. So he's already built up a track record of being fired like a billion times. I trust him on this one. You know, like, he's so used to being fired that there's no reason for him to lie. This is where, let's all just reset. You know, let's all just take a little breather. Let's have a little kumbaya. I'm cranky. I don't know if you guys are cranky. I'm cranky today. I'm agitated. I'm irritable. You're cranky?
I'm never cranky.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Vibes that's coordinator. Let's go back and do the A-list again. I'll bring the vibes.
Yeah, let's do the A-list again. I'm cranky. I'm going to do better. I'm going to bring positive vibes only now, okay? A-list, you know what? You were bringing them because you hit yesterday. I was in the torture chamber where I'm sitting there waiting for that final goal in an over, and it just never comes. You know, you just feel like, you know when you're just refreshing an app and you look away from it and you always think you look away from the app longer than you did, where
it's
you're
been like 8 seconds.
Yeah, I've looked away for at least 20
There's been
minutes.
Times where I was scrolling Twitter and I close Twitter and the next thing I do is open Twitter. I'm like, what? Just wait, what? It's like you're just programmed to just do that again. Reset.
I was doing the refresh. Mm-hmm. The Colorado Avalanche never came through for me. They did not hit the total. Blake Murphy got absolutely jobbed yet again by the sports science departments of the universe, which continue to launch an assault on baseball where they go, hey, we know you love seeing these baseball players, but can we interest you in caring more about pitch counts than players? Because if you're into pitch counts and you're into rest days, baseball is the sport for you, right? Like, they got a pitch clock to speed up games. We need to just have a games clock to cut down some of these games, because what's the point of having 162 if we don't get to watch the best players do their damn thing? So you get screwed on Manea.
What's the point of having an ace like Frankie Montas, future Blue Jay Frankie Montas? Five strikeouts over six innings, sure, that's fine. But he had thrown 83 pitches and allowed two hits and pitched basically no high leverage plate appearances.
Brad from North Dumfries texted in, "I hope Blake is ready to give up on pitcher props. I think I had more confidence in his NCAA picks than on these."
Okay, so
North Dumfries.
No, positive. Here's what I will say. I actually think that Brad is right, but only because baseball is wrong.
Right.
Is that fair?
Two things can be true.
I'd have to dive deeper on how often the strikeout over-unders are hitting so far this season. Mm-hmm. But that's not readily available data. However, if we're judging anything off of a four-event sample size, it's silly. So, no.
Do you know Brad from North Dumfries?
No.
I was gonna say, isn't that near Rumbo?
Oh, I was going to say, is that buddies? I would say this, is that I personally am not going to touch pitcher strikeout totals. I got hit on it yesterday in a different game with Aaron Nola. He was a little bit less effective than we were going with the Oakland game. But, yeah, I just think that with pitchers not fully stretched out, the shortened spring, it's too much of a question mark for me right now, even though Blake, I know personally, has hit on some strikeout props in the non-Wake and Rake.
Including in the Wake and Rake, like 2 days ago. So.
There have been actual
short memories.
Hits. So Ailish is the only one yesterday that ends up hitting a rarity in the Wake and Rake lately, where we've only gone one of three. But yes, we are shifting off of the crankiness, the upsetness of the show. We have Blue Jays baseball back tonight. Woo! So let's start with that ahead of the Leafs game. Toronto Blue Jays and the Boston Red Sox. Jays are underdogs, which makes sense, I guess, because of the way that Yusei Kikuchi looked in his debut. I guess he's looking to bounce back tonight. Where is our degree of confidence with Yusei Kikuchi going against, I think it's Eovaldi on the mound tonight. So yeah. Red Sox minus 152 are favorites. Blue Jays plus 123 on the money line. Blake, let's start with you. How are you feeling about this pitching matchup?
Yeah, I think the line's probably pretty fair, as is the over-under at 9.5. You can get a little juice on the over right now, which, mm-hmm. again, given pitcher workloads and stuff like that, I don't mind. Now, the bullpens will be rested coming off of an off day, so maybe you like the relief performance a little bit better. But if you're saying this line is one way because Kikuchi and Fenway dealing to righties is a bit of a risk, and we're operating with, hey, most teams haven't let their starters go over 90 pitches, so Eovaldi could give way to the bullpen fairly early, then yeah, I'm an over lean in that one. I don't have a strong take on Kikuchi yet. Like, he's mm-hmm. he looked not great in his first appearance, but we need to see a little bit more. He's changing a lot right now. He's changing his spot on the mound. He's changing a little bit of his delivery. He's pitching to new catchers. I want to see how, you know, it works out after a game, but it's certainly not a spot where I'm hitting the optimistic Kikuchi props. It's probably a wait and see. This is an information gathering game for me ahead of the rest of the series.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think we've seen him once, and he had, two earned runs against the Yankees. Wasn't the longest showing. He was yanked at 84 pitches. I feel like I just don't really know the Kikuchi experience yet, and that's what tonight could be, a learning lesson for us, an informational game, as Blake put it, which means that I really don't have a solid feel, and that's fine. That's why I won't be really touching this game, other than maybe some other player props. But we've been saying this whole time that, okay, it's been a shortened spring training. Maybe the pitchers are still getting into their groove. We're hoping that that's the case with someone like a Ryu that might have, been a little bit pushed early. So maybe the Kikuchi experience will get fully tonight. We'll start to understand who this guy is. But he's new, so kind of exciting, maybe, if you're a Jays fan that wants to learn what you got. Tonight's your night.
One thing to put on the radar with Eovaldi on the mound, he is a high strikeout guy. He throws extremely hard. So maybe that's a spot where, given what we've seen from Matt Chapman, you're not crazy enthusiastic. Bo Bichette has hammered Nate Eovaldi in the past. And one thing to keep in mind, just because the Jays will probably have a couple lefties on the mound, is the last 2 years, Eovaldi's had reverse splits. So he's actually been a guy who's been tougher on righties, tougher on lefties than on righties. So don't necessarily pencil in a boost for your left-handed hitter props.
Well, listen, it's a pretty decent sample over his career, and there have been different Blue Jays teams, but Eovaldi's only 1-2 against the Jays with over 49 innings, and he's got an ERA that's 4.56. So he hasn't been exactly Mr. Kills the Blue Jays. I would say that there's a certain level I have a degree of confidence in them being able to hit him. So I actually think if there's any play for me tonight, it might be the over, and it might actually even be the Blue Jays team over. I haven't seen it yet. I have not seen the Blue Jays team prop up yet. If you guys do have it, let me know. But generally, when you're an underdog and a total is 9.5, that means it comes in around 4.5, and that's something that I might... Yeah, 4.5 runs. I could see the Jays even win. What?
4.5 with plus? Juice, plus 110, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say if it's going to be around that number, I'm guessing that it's going to either be a plus number or somewhere like around minus 105. It's at least a little interesting for me for the Blue Jays to have that one, to be at Fenway, to be facing a pitcher they've had success against, for Bo Bichette to have had success against. I really think that so much of what's going on with the Jays right now, or what is going to determine their success, is if Bo can get out of his slump, things are going to change rapidly. Like, their lineup, everyone's going, oh, it seems thin because of the injuries. It's like, no, the guys down the lineup have actually been doing okay lately. Like, Gurriel's gotten back on track. I've actually liked what I've seen from Kirk at the plate. He's being a bit more selective. I get frustrated with Kirk when he's first pitch ground out and hits into double plays. That's when I go, okay, buddy, like, not those. You can't have those. That is going to drive old JD nuts. But Zach Collins has come in. The dude has been a rake machine. And outside of, like, Biggio, everyone at least is doing something. Everyone's at least contributing a little bit of something as of late. It's got to be Bo Bichette. He's got to get right. And this is a pitcher that Blake just said he's been great against historically. So maybe if Bo can just get a little bit of life here, you're going to see the Jays score some runs. I'm just with the two of you where I need to see Kikuchi more before I have confidence in betting him against a team like the Red Sox on the money line. Like, that's just, this reeks of nightmare factory to me, where they just end up piling up runs on him early, and we have to go see Trent Thornton's and Anthony K's of the world, and I'm going, what was I doing here? I didn't belong here. But I think you can project out the Jays run total a little bit more than you can project out the money line.
And if you're looking for the why as to why Bo Bichette may have success against Nathan Eovaldi, the big thing is Eovaldi is consistently among the highest first strike pitchers in all of baseball. We know that Bo Bichette likes to be very, very aggressive early in counts, sometimes to a fault. And Eovaldi, yeah, it's good stuff. It's hard to hit. It's coming in fast, but he will almost universally try to get ahead 0-1 so that he can throw that fastball outside of the zone. So you're looking at about 2/3 of the time he starts a batter off with a strike, which is, again, consistently year over year, top 15, top 10 even in baseball. So does explain a little bit of why Bo's had some success there.
So do we have any other thoughts on this game? Is there anything I would want to play? Is this actually, Blake, is it worth taking a little bit of a home run or a total bases sprinkle on Bo given those numbers?
Yeah, I might. I'll sit with it a little later and you know, really look at it. But Bo right now over 1.5 total bases is even money. So that's not a bad spot. Plus 650 for a home run. Obviously much better value there, but the total bases over 1.5 is there's a clearer path. And the nice thing about Bo is, unlike some other guys like Chapman or Biggio in the lineup, you don't have to worry about him taking a walk and not getting credit for the base. You know, those bases are coming on hits only.
Honestly, it makes him the king of the total bases bet. Like, yes. It really does. It's guys who are like non-walk machines like Bo, great for those total bets. So let's move on to the Toronto Maple Leafs, who are also back in action tonight. They play the Flyers. We have James Van Riemsdyk on our show later today at 9:30. His shot total is over 2.5 against his former team, and he's on the show, and it's at plus 150.
You know he's going to score tonight.
Well, I was just going to say Ailish Forfar. I feel like, to me, this
plus 210.
For the goal?
For anytime goal for James Van Riemsdyk.
Okay.
His shots. You know, this is a big narrative game. You know, X comes back. I'm always all over that one. Yeah, I'm in on that. Who did I have last time that scored? Oh, Tom Wilson. So, you know, it's a real trend here that the player from the city or the X comes back and has a good game. So I feel that one. I like that one. Austin Matthews is minus 200 for an anytime goal. We don't even know if he's playing. Has it been confirmed? I don't know.
I don't think he has been confirmed.
Minus 200 for an anytime goal. That's like probably the craziest one we've seen so far.
Well, that one to me actually makes sense because the Flyers are sieves.
For sure, but still minus 200 for an anytime goal.
Right. I will say with JVR's shot total that he has not gone over 2.5 in 10 games since he's gone over that total.
Well, we'll just ask him at 9:30. How many times do you think you're going to get on the net tonight? A couple shots?
We will. I am going to probably play that prop, just given that it is the Toronto Maple Leafs and that there's probably going to be a little bit more offense and he's probably going to be looking for it a little bit. And I always like the Ailish revenge game. With the Leafs tonight, I think that Matthews, if he plays in this game, is going to score. I'm assuming that he is going to play in this game, but if he doesn't, I'm going to continue to play the... I think there's a lot of value on Pierre Engvall. He's just a guy that is getting more ice time without Matthews in the lineup. I thought his offense looked really good. He and Nylander together again in that game against the Islanders. I just look at him as a guy where there's a lot of value on Engvall right now when he's getting to play up the lineup a little bit and get that increased role. The other guy, of course, it's a little bit more fluid with what happens with Bunting, but if they go back to the Mikheyev thing, Mikheyev on a point might be worth a play for people if the lines stay the same. But yeah, that's where I'm at right now with this one, is that I'm not touching the Leafs on the money line simply because it's not worth it to me. They're minus 455 favorites. I don't think I'm playing the Matthews goal because of what Ailish said. Minus 200 is just like, that's you placing a $200 wager to win $100. That's just not a good value to me. I'll be searching for some other stuff in this game.
Two things that I also like was Bunting finally got the breakthrough he needed. You could see the relief when he scored. He's still a great point getter, a great player. People have him in the Calder conversation, regardless of his age, whatever. He's leading the league in rookie points. I could see him getting another point tonight. He's obviously rolling that high. Second thing that I like that we hadn't mentioned was Leafs over 4.5 goals. It's still minus 115. If you like the over 5.5 goals, it's plus 215. In the last couple games, they've scored 4, 5, 7. 6-6. So like they're putting the puck in the net. There's quite a few games that they're hitting the over on the game too. So I think maybe a Leafs over prop is nice to add.
I like that a lot.
Yeah. I think that could
I like
be good.
That a lot. Mm-hmm. I really like that. I don't see a scenario where they're not at least putting some numbers on the score sheet tonight. And as we've seen with the Flyers, they're just not a reliable hockey team right now. They're also dead last in their division. Mm-hmm. They're not really playing for much. When we do talk to JVR, I'm going to ask him about, you know, rebuilds and how he goes through something like a scenario like this and what you try to do at the end of the season versus a team like the Leafs where you're already locked into a playoff spot. So maybe both teams are a little bit not as locked in, but I still think if you're the Toronto Maple Leafs, you want to go out there and you want to thump them. And if Matthews does play and he's searching for 60, this is going to be an important night for him to get to 60. I don't want to have 5 games left down the stretch, one of which you potentially want to sit, 2 of which are against, you know, potential playoff opponents, or, well, 3 if you don't sit the Boston game, where you're hunting for that number. So I would anticipate that they're pretty aggressive offensively tonight and that they do treat this one a little bit like some fire wagon hockey.
2 small notes on that. The first is, if you do bet the Matthews goal prop, if he ends up being scratched, that's a void bet. You get your money back. So don't sweat that too much. Philadelphia has allowed more than 4.5 goals in 3 of their last 5. And the 2 games they didn't, they allowed 4. So you're going to be pretty close on. And that doesn't include just a couple weeks ago when the Leafs put 6 up on them. So it does seem like it's going to be an offensive game. Certainly not a lot of faith in that Philadelphia Flyers defense or their backups projected to be in I'm drawing a blank on, but it's
Sandstrom.
It's not expected to be Carter Hart.
Well, if it's Sandstrom,
Martin Jones.
Okay, well, guess what? Same thing.
898 save percentage.
Yeah, yeah, I was going to say. You know what's funny is you get these – this is the ultimate – do you guys have can't-let-go players where – like Martin Jones had that incredible run in 2016 with the Sharks where he was just awesome, right? They make it to the Stanley Cup Finals, and we're going, hey, is Martin Jones going to be a Team Canada guy? Is he going to be a potential Team Canada goaltender? Are we actually looking at – one of the takes from that series was with Matt Murray in net for the Penguins and Martin Jones in net for the Sharks. We did this whole – or at least I was doing this whole, hey, is Canada net that big of a story? You know, we always make this way too big of a deal, the whole Canadian goaltender thing. These two – the country's fine. The two goalies that are hot taking their team to the finals are good. I don't think either of those guys get a call from Team Canada right now. I don't think Martin Jones is waiting by the phone on Team Canada International Cuts Day. So, yeah, either way, the goaltenders in these matchups should be a little overwhelmed. But he's always one of those guys where I look at him and have a little bit of fear because of that run. Like, do you guys have a player like that where you've seen them play incredibly well and you can't let that version of them go even though it's years later?
Hmm. Yeah. His name's Dylan Bundy. He's a pitcher in baseball. And it's finally coming around.
Oh, all right.
Okay, yeah.
I'm going to think on mine. All right.
That's a good one. So let's move to our best bets tonight. Mm-hmm. I think that, to me, again, the Leafs, it's a non-play because you can't. It's really hard to play. If you do want to play it, it's definitely a puck line one, but there's even juice on that. So, yeah, Maple Leafs team total is the slight recommendation. I don't mind that one. I also like a couple of shots on goal props. If Matthews doesn't play, I really like Engvall. If he does play, I probably won't hit that one up. I'm not going to play Tavares either way. I already made that mistake when Matthews did play or didn't play, and it didn't turn out to be anything good, so I'm abandoning it, even though it's a process results of one game sample. Let's go to our best bets again. Ailish Forfar, the only winner yesterday.
I'm on a little bit of a streak. Is that right, Blake?
I don't know. You gotta.
Do you want the actual answer? You've won two in a row.
Yeah,
but okay. In the last like week, I thought I was getting a little bit.
Oh
better.
Yeah. Four of your last five, six of your last. Eight.
Okay, so that sounds better than a two-game streak. But
You said streak, though.
Yes. Anyway, couple heavy NHL favorites, so heavy that you can't even bet the in regulation. Mm-hmm. Lightning minus 500 over the Detroit Red Wings. Even the puck line, minus 1.5, they're minus 185 for that. It's just crazy. I liked that, but that's not even playable, obviously. But I'm going to go with the Panthers. Oh, yeah. The Panthers and the Islanders. That's a good game. The Islanders are kind of fighting a little bit for something. They could have a little potential wild card action. But the Panthers are a great team, obviously. I'm going to go with them in regulation, minus 120. Them just on the money line is minus 200. But I'm not going to squeak that one in there. I can't believe that they'll win in regulation. Obviously, they're putting up great games lately. I like that one a lot. I mentioned a couple Leafs ones I like the Leafs over 4.5. I'm not gonna put that in the wake and rake, but like that a lot. Other than that, there's just like so many heavy favorites, maybe parlay pieces, but I'm not gonna touch them in the wake and rake. So I like that. Florida Panthers in regulation, minus 120 over the New York Islanders.
So the Islanders aren't playing for anything. All the Eastern Conference teams are locked up. There's no wild card action.
A little bit of pride, maybe.
Yeah, it's not wild card action.
Right,
a little bit of pride.
They're fifth, I think, in the something.
Yeah, they're fifth in the division, yeah, so but they're like 17 points back.
They've had some sneaky games as of late, some wins. But yeah, sorry, they're not playing for anything in terms of standings, right? But I think that they have a little bit of pride on the line. So
I would say that this is a tough one for me from the standpoint of the Panthers are completely out of reach when it comes to the conference. We'll see what they play for down the stretch, but the next closest teams are the Leafs and Hurricanes in terms of the best record. And the Leafs sitting at 106, like they're 8 points back of where the Panthers sit right now. That's basically a done deal. The Islanders, similar thing. I watched, obviously went to that game on Sunday. Mm-hmm. Could not have been less impressed, really, with the Islanders. Just not a very good team, so... if you think the Leafs and Panthers kind of replicate each other offensively, I would say that this is a good pick because, yeah, Florida is still loaded. Florida's still going to be able to put pressure on this team. I just don't think that the Islanders are very talented. There's just not a lot there.
I will say that Florida's playing for their fifth straight road win, so they've been really strong on the road. They can go into an arena and dominate. So another reason why I like them today in regulation.
Okay. The one thing they could have to play for still, too, is the President's Trophy. And I know that is not a big deal to a lot of teams, but I do wonder if, hey, they're 2 points back. It's something to keep. You need something to keep the focus. You don't want to take 2 weeks off heading into the playoffs where the games don't matter.
No. So I maybe think you want it.
Yeah, maybe you've circled that as the potential goal. You're 2 points back of the Avs. So.
They put up 10 wins in a row, too. I just realized that. So oof, they're on a hot streak. No,
they are red hot. Red hot.
Not only Avalanche were doing the exact same. They might be due for a loss, but I'm still going for it.
Those two teams fighting for the President's Trophy, the Avalanche are 9-1-0. And if they would have just tied that game yesterday and given old JD his wake and rake pick, that would have been very nice of them. But ice cold, losers of one straight, the Colorado Avalanche. I'm going to go also with the NHL tonight. There's some stuff in the NBA that I like as well, but I'm going with full narrative storyline season, baby. Ooh. And that storyline right now is the LA Kings and their attempt to lock up this playoff spot. The Golden Knights last night again, scuffling. They've lost two in a row. There's a shot here. I actually don't really like the Kings. Their goal differential is -4 still this season. But you know who I like less? The Anaheim Ducks, whose goal differential is -34.
Oh.
This is kind of a must-win game for the Kings, and so I'm just going to take them on the money line here tonight. I think the Ducks stink. I think the Ducks are packing it in. I think that the Kings are treating this as a complete must-win. This is a back-against-the-wall game. You want to make the playoffs. You got to have this one tonight. I'm taking the LA Kings, not overthinking it, just the money line. No goals in regulation, no nothing else. Just a nice little parlay piece for the gang. I have it at -160. That is what I'm playing today, is the LA Kings to win.
Nice. I like that one. That's good.
That was on my list as well. I'm going to do the annoying thing and go with a late baseball game. Sorry. Mm. I'm going with the Padres on the money line. They're playing against the Reds, starting River San Martin, who had one okay start and then got absolutely shelled in the other. He has almost no track record. The Padres are very good and throw Joe Musgrove in this one. I thought about the Astros, but the Mike Trout status is up in the air. We don't know if he's going to play tonight. The Astros have teed off on Patrick Sandoval, but Sandoval's gotten pretty solid, and he's against Framber Valdez there. A few interesting over-under plays if you search around MLB today. There's 17 baseball games today because there are a couple doubleheaders, so lots there. And then on the NBA slate, just to tee it up, it's Heat -7 against the Hawks, Grizz -7 against the Wolves, and Suns -9.5 against the Pelicans. Some injury question marks there, but nothing that should swing any of that too much. So that's the same story on all those games you got the first time around.
Are you taking, so San Diego's the second biggest favorite of the day. They're -152 or the -192. Are you taking the money line or on the spread?
Yeah, I was taking money line. I don't have it at that extreme a line.
I got it -185, a little better. But
all right, you can get a better price on that. Okay, so
it still fits our parameters.
Yeah, still fits in. Okay, so San Diego Padres, LA Kings, and Florida Panthers. That is today's wake and rake.
Panthers in regulation.
Panthers in regulation, correct. Panthers in regulation. I forgot that one was a bigger line. The rundown quickly of NBA slate tonight. I can't trust the Hawks yet, so I'm going with the Heat again. I'm just going to enjoy this Timberwolves-Grizzlies game out of the purity of just it being just a pure basketball fun matchup. And also, I think that smart money might be to continue to play Chris Paul double-doubles. If you can get them at a good price right now, Chris Paul just operating in the pick and roll with his players and the way that he's shooting the lights out of the basketball, I think that he's going to hit that number. And we got it at a plus, my brother and I, on Sunday night. So take a look at that sucker. Let's take a break. Let's come back. Loaded hour, James Van Riemsdyk, as we said. But first, Michael Lee. We will ask him for the outsider's perspective on this Raptors series. That's next on the Fan Morning Show. JD Blake and Ailish, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.